Good afternoon, everyone. And, of course, welcome back to a very exciting episode of Red Pill News Live. Thank you so much to Anarchist Owl getting it started over there on Rumble. Appreciate the support, my friend. He says, may I ask for some prayers? I drove 26 hours for a job interview, which is tomorrow, and my engine blew. I really, really need this job, and if I don't get it, I'm kind of screwed. All right, everyone, please, please pray for Anarchist Owl. Anarchist Owl, if you want to give out any information in the chat for people to reach out to you, if you need help or anything like that, you have my permission to go ahead and share it. You guys, Anarchist Owl has been around for a long time. I sincerely hope you get this job. And if there's anything we can do to make sure that you have everything you need to do that, then we'll see what we can do. All right, you guys, we have a lot to go over today. As you can see from the thumbnail, kind of dire, bleak news coming out of a top virologist who is predicting a coming mass casualty event. Why? Exactly how? We'll get into all of that. I certainly don't want to scare people, and I hope that I can give you some tools to better protect yourself to make sure that you're not among those who shuffle off this mortal coil a little earlier than you thought. So do me a favor, hit that like button, share the show, sit back, relax, grab your popcorn. We're going to be right back after this. Warnings of a recession are growing louder as we near sell in May and go away. Citibank warned, the soft landing dream is over. The U.S. economy is headed for a recession in the middle of 2024. Morgan Stanley warns, a U.S. dollar regime shift could threaten stocks. And meanwhile, the Fed's most trusted recession indicator is flashing code red. Because every recession since 1945 has been preceded by a yield curve inversion. Meanwhile, the M2 money supply is meaningfully contracting for only the fifth time since 1870. All signs appear to point to a sizable downturn for the Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ. Now, meanwhile, gold prices have been hitting all-time highs, and the rally is far from over. Now, y'all know silver is always late to the party, but once it finds momentum, it can easily outperform gold. So protect your retirement with gold or place a bullish bet on silver. Call the proud Americans of the Patriot Gold Group today before it's too late. Just mention Red Pill 78 and this show, Red Pill News, and you're always going to get best-in-class service from Patriots Protecting Patriots. Patriot Gold Group has the no-fee for Life IRA, where your IRA or 401k can be in physical gold and silver, and you just might be eligible for that no fee for life IRA on qualifying rollovers. So give them a call today at 888-857-6092 and get your free investor guide today. Patriot Gold Group is a Consumer Affairs top-rated gold IRA dealer for 7 years in a row. Call them today at 888-857-6092. And when you support my sponsor, whoa, I actually hit the button way too soon, but thank you very much to Patriot Gold, the sponsor of today's program. If you want to give them a call and support the show and also make sure that you and your finances are in a good spot, you can get a hold of them by dialing the phone number for them, 888-857-6092. My good friend and mod, Debbie Roush, will probably be passing that out in the description, or rather in the chat of this video. And also, I have a crawler on the bottom of the screen, which also displays the sponsors for today's program. So check that out. I also have a little handy dandy tool in the bottom left hand corner, which tells you all the social media platforms I'm on. So if you see a logo that you're on and you're not following me yet, do me a favor, give me a follow, because if anything happens, then you'll be able to find out by seeing an announcement that I put there. Also, if you donate on Ko-Fi, it does have a neat little tool that will appear on screen. Obviously, I'm going to thank you. And of course, I want to thank Marley Jane as well over on Rumble. She says, this V-induced mass casualty event has me terrified. My youngest daughter is a U.S. Marine and was forced to take it. My oldest daughter in healthcare was also forced to take it. Marley, I can absolutely understand your fear in this, and I will definitely talk about those aspects of it when we get to that point. I think that at the end of the day, everybody needs to remember that we're not talking about a uniformity of distribution. Keep that in mind, because there are some people who definitely got sick as a result of taking the jabs. There are other people Nothing happened to them. So remember that. We're not talking about a uniform, monolithic shot here. There were multiple different types of injections that were given, some of them innocuous, some of them not innocuous at all. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, I had a couple of other individual things that I wanted to get to. First of all, I thought we could talk about Bill Gates's new mission. His mission is to sponsor lessons into how you should be able to strip away the white supremacy of math. This is, quite honestly, one of the most ridiculous and unintelligent movements that I have ever heard of. All right. From my understanding of math, math is formulaic. Math is also absolute. If you have 1 + 1, it equals 2. 2 + 2 equals 4. 3 + 5 equals 8. 8 + 2 equals 10. On and on and on and on and on. There is something called order of operations. And when you follow that order of operations, if you are dealing with something that is far more complicated, or if you are talking about different types of math, maybe you're trying to solve for an angle, you're trying to solve for degrees, you're trying to solve any number of equations that might give you an answer. Algebraic, calculaic, geometric, the list goes on and on. But each and every one of those various disciplines within mathematics, they are absolute. All right. This is not something like theoretical physics, okay, where people can just show up and kind of make a guess, throw the kitchen sink at the wall and see what sticks. But Americans can basically see what Bill Gates is doing. This effort to strip out the so-called white supremacy from mathematics lessons across the country and instead to create systemic barriers that are stopping people from joining and enjoying mathematics, people who are in the Black, Latinx, and multilingual communities. In fact, this is anti-racist math education, and that's what you bigots need to get through your skulls. Again, you know, no offense, but this is the definition of retarded. This is so ridiculous. The idea that math itself is racist. There is no race in math. There is simply a formulation. There is a calculation that is done. If you have $100 and I bring you $100 and I tell you that it's $200 and you tell me, no, it's $100, and I say, racist, racist, take my money. Take my money. It's $200 because I say it so. That doesn't make it so. Not at all. So listen to this. This is from a quotation about Bill Gates' efforts to strip white supremacy away from math. The pathway offers guidance and resources for educators to use now as they plan their curriculum, while also offering opportunities for ongoing self-reflection as they seek to develop an anti-racist math practice. The toolkit strides serve as multiple on-ramps for educators as they navigate the individual and collective journey from equity to anti-racism. The programming intended for children explains. And the examiners note that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is the only donor listed on a website for a group dedicated to eliminating racism from the nation's math curriculum. So when your children come home and they don't know how to do math, they don't know how to do formulas, they can't figure out what it is they need to figure out, something that's basically going to preclude them from being able to join any number of professions when they grow up, you can turn around and say, thank you so much, Bill and Melinda Gates. I suppose that I should be thankful that you didn't just kill my kids with a clot shot vaccination injection. But this, if it is possible for them to accomplish this, to completely rewrite the foundations of mathematics, it's going to result in people who are unable to participate in society. And what do you guys think? Is it possible? Is it likely? Is it Occam's razor that Bill Gates and Melinda, well, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is looking to dumb down the American population? I mean, Bill Gates, he's like an autist. He's like an engineer working in computers. Actually, I don't even know what Bill Gates' specialty is, but the guy's got to be pretty smart. You know, I mean, he was able to steal all that technology and make Microsoft, allegedly, in my opinion. But in this instance, this website is talking about how the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is eliminating racism from the nation's math curriculum. And if that would be accomplished, they're going to need to eliminate the need for students to show their work after solving a problem. So I guess they are at the heart. They're saying that black, Latin, so black, Hispanic, and people of color students, it's racist to ask them to show that they comprehend the formulations to get from point A to point B. No more solving for X, guys. I guess that's really going to make it a lot easier. But condemned in the lessons are the focus that insists student get the right answer, and it requires student to show their work. If it's not the right answer in math, it's the wrong answer in math. I mean, you know, unless we're in 1984, am I a resident of Oceania now? 2 + 2 = 5? Say it. Live it. Love it. White supremacy culture infiltrates math classrooms and everyday teacher actions, coupled with the beliefs that underline these actions. They perpetuate educational harm on black, Latinx, and multilingual students. And let me just say, nobody who's Hispanic says Latinx. It's like rabid left-wing revolutionaries that say Latinx, denying them the full access to the world of mathematics. If they don't understand what the hell they're doing, they are not going to gain full access to the world of mathematics at all, in any way, shape, or form. So the lessons inform faculty that anti-racist math educators deconstruct the ways they have been taught math to learn and teach math differently. Subtopics include ethnomathematics. What is that? You're going to count rocks? You're going to count, I don't know, banana trees? What are you going to do? How is ethnomathematics? I mean, and like everybody comes from an ethnic group. So which ethnomathematics? You've also got to talk about thoughtful scaffolding. Have no idea what that means. And students must reclaim their mathematical ancestry. All right. So then we go back. So I guess Asians, I guess that would mean that they would have to go back to using an abacus, even though, quite honestly, you have to be pretty smart to use an abacus. And I think that a lot of them still do. But what about Africa? I mean, you go back to ancient sub-Saharan Africa, and there was no such thing as mathematics. I don't know that they had a concept for that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, they had like, you know, tales that were passed down from generation to generation. They had, you know, legend, and they would regale their ancestors and stuff. But I mean, complex formulaic mathematical equations are a relatively a new phenomenon in modern Western society. I know you can go back in time quite a ways, but I mean, it was Western society that came up with this stuff. You know, we do have mathematics that came out of the Middle Eastern world, Arabic, the Arabic numeral system. But again, I don't know that they were working on, you know, A times B plus X equals, you know, X, Y, Z or whatever it was. So anyways, my point here is that if Bill Gates is successful, it's just going to be another way for them to dumb down the population. And then when Americans are too stupid to become engineers or computer programmers or even just to figure out the basic mathematics behind what's in their checking account, we're going to be in a really hard-pressed spot. And who is in that instance is going to replace that ability to process information in our heads? Well, it's going to end up being artificial intelligence, won't it? I mean, it'll have to be. And then human beings will have to meld with artificial intelligence, and that transhumanistic hellscape that they've been pushing us towards for so many years, it's going to become a reality. So make sure you teach your kids the most racist kind of mathematics that you possibly can, according to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, because there's nothing racist about math. It's ridiculous. Penny says, in addition to being a nurse, I was once a teacher. Showing your work. Yes, I used to take math classes, so I know showing your work. Exactly. It's essential. If you don't show your work, then you don't comprehend the answer. It also shows me that the child's thought process as he solves the problem. I can't correct what I can't see. Well, Penny, you bigot. How dare you even ask? You don't have any right to be inside that BIPOC POC non-binary child's head. And you don't have the right to ask them how they solved it. You better just trust them. It's racist if you think that maybe they cheated or maybe you think that they just came up with the answer. I don't know where. You have to be able to show your work so that you can solve the problem and that you can show other people that you comprehend the problem. If you don't, you know, good luck. You're not even going to get a job flipping burgers at McDonald's now because they're going to have robots doing that very soon. So good luck. Good luck. I sure hope that this fails. Oh, yeah. Sorry, Penny. You're not a bigot. You're a racist. All right. This should probably not surprise too many people, but the owner of the ship, the Dolly ship that crashed into the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore last week, has just filed a new claim in U.S. federal court. Obviously, they want to get as much distance between them and this disaster as they possibly can. They are putting it into writing. We are not responsible for the Key Bridge's collapse. You know, anytime I get into a car accident, that's the first thing I say, too. Or if I just forget to change the oil in my car for, 6 or 7 months and then the engine seizes up, I make a claim to GM with the warranty department. You know, hey, the engine stopped working. It's got nothing to do with me. All I did was drive it every day. Penny says, just wait till these kids start doing your dosage calculations in the hospital. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What's the difference between a milliliter and a deciliter?
They're not going to know anything. Good luck. 315 Russ says the tyrants don't want the populace to be able to figure out the percentage of your money they steal. That's right. And they also don't want you to be able to figure out how many if you have overpaid on your taxes, how many taxes you're supposed to have paid, whether or not the balance in your checking account is what it's supposed to be. It's all about siphoning off the best and brightest. Now, there will be people they teach math to. Mark my words. They will ensure that certain individuals are very well versed in mathematical solutions. And those people are probably going to end up working for the deep state if they are allowed to continue. Porpoiseful, thank you for the cookie. Thick Ray, good to see you, hon. She says, hey there, Zach. And the best way to roll is rolling in home. Hashtag the truth is loose. Thank you. And then Netfolks one, thank you very much. Now your voice changing ability is crazy. Cool. All right. So in this court petition, the owner of the Dolly, it's a company called Grace Ocean Private Limited. They denied any fault or neglect of the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. But, you know, I go back to the joke that I just made about not changing the oil in my car. Even if I have a 100,000-mile warranty on my engine, because it's a brand new car, if I fail to maintain it, then whose fault is that? Well, it sure seemed like as a result of the video that we saw, there seemed to be some sort of fault in the engine. I mean, things shut down. They lost power. So what does that mean? Well, it either means that somebody wasn't doing their job. Maybe this is a DEI situation that you can point to. Maybe they hired somebody who was a ship's mechanic who didn't have any experience, but they had the right skin color, or maybe they had the right bits and pieces between their legs. Or maybe it was that it was sabotage. I mean, sabotage seems just as likely at this point, especially if this company says, hey, we had nothing to do with it. But a portion of the filing obtained by The Independent has this to say. The bridge collapse was not due to any fault, neglect, or want of care on the part of the ship owner and operator, the vessel, or any persons or entities for whose acts ship owner and operator may be responsible. The owners and the manager of this cargo ship that crashed into the Baltimore Bridge is obviously not trying to be on the hook for the tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars of damages that are sure to arise from this disaster. Not only do you have the cleanup efforts, you also have the rebuilding efforts. You also have the people who died on that bridge. You know, likely some of them were illegal. They're not going to have to worry about paying their families anything. But the people who were driving across the bridge in their cars and ended up in the water and never got out, those people are probably going to have family members who come, you know, seeking recompense. This Grace Ocean Private Limited, this is the Singaporean company that owns them. Synergy Marine Private Limited is the owner of the ship. They filed a petition in federal court so that they could deny any sort of responsibility in this. So how they are actually denying responsibility, that hasn't been established, but they continued by saying, alternatively, if any such faults caused or contributed to the bridge collapse or to any loss or damage arising out of the casualty, which is denied, such faults were occasioned and occurred without petitioner's privity or knowledge. So they're saying, number one, we didn't do it, so stop looking. Number two, if we did it, we didn't know. All right. But over $60 million has already been approved by the Biden regime to remove the debris from where the bridge once stood. $60 million is a lot of money, but I tend to believe that they're probably going to burn through that pretty quickly, because obviously these guys are not known for their management of money. Just look at how much money we've sent to Ukraine. They've lost more money in Ukraine that they sent over there than it would require to rebuild this bridge. So they're simply not really caring at this point. All right, so a bit of disturbing news about Lauren Boebert, Congressman Lauren Boebert. She put a post out on Facebook letting her constituents and the people whose district she's running to represent know that she was just recently diagnosed with May-Thurner syndrome. Now, I'm not familiar with May-Thurner syndrome. I've never heard of it before, but I guess it's a syndrome that affects the blood flow in your body. And she ended up having to go into surgery because she had an acute blood clot that caused severe swelling in her leg. Also, I was just thinking about this earlier, but my friend Matt Couch, you know, he got a blood clot in his leg, caused his leg to swell up. I think that he waited a little bit longer than Lauren Boebert did, but he ended up losing half of his leg. I don't know how serious this is, but from what I understand, as of now, she's gone through surgery, but this is kind of a tenuous situation. She did continue by saying, "I want to thank Dr. Rebecca Bade and the entire team at UC Health Medical Center on the Rockies for their great care and providing helpful insight on my recent diagnosis. I'm looking forward to making a full recovery and getting back to Congress to continue fighting for Colorado." Now, they said, "We successfully performed surgery on the Congresswoman this morning and expect her to make a full recovery. Patients with May-Thurner syndrome who undergo the procedure to restore blood flow are able to live and work just as they have in the past after a brief recovery." Boebert is obviously a two-term congresswoman who currently represents the 3rd congressional district, but she just recently announced she's going to be running for the 4th congressional district, because that's the district that Ken Buck just recently left. Now, the reason that she had chosen to run for a different district before is because she had narrowly won her race for this second term back in 2022. She nearly lost in the 3rd district. She did not get the support that I think she got the first time around. But she said, and you know, wanted to let the people of the district know, because they were not too happy with her, "It's the right move for me personally, and it's the right decision for those who support our conservative movement. Colorado's 4th district is hungry for an unapologetic defender of freedom with a proven track record for standing strong for conservative principles." So as long as Lauren Boebert doesn't have another blood clot pop up, then she should be okay. However, from what I understand, May-Thurner syndrome is frequent in people who often are sitting. I think that she's probably going to be sitting around a lot in Congress, because they don't really get much done, if we can be honest. Also, in people who fly a lot, she clearly ends up flying a lot as well. But the good news is that she's not going to lose her leg. And so I think we can agree. Let's pray for Lauren Boebert. You know, I do like Lauren Boebert. I'm not like a huge super fan or something like that. I think that anybody could be better in their position. But I know that the people of the 3rd district were not happy with her for making that decision to run for a different district. Sure, it's Colorado still, but it's not the people that she was representing. Who instead is going to represent those people? So anyways, I hope that she continues to recover, and I hope that she doesn't have any more unfortunate incidents with blood clots in her legs. All right. Yes, correct. Hold on just a second, guys. Okay. So here's some good news that I actually meant to report on yesterday. I just never got a chance to. So we all have been talking about Joe Biden's draconian EV mandates that have been designed to destroy the traditional fuel gasoline-powered car industry. Well, just recently, a federal judge blocked one of these Biden administration rules that would have forced states to set emissions reduction plans for certain roadways. So a coalition of 21 states actually sued the Federal Highway Administration over this rule. It was finalized the day before Thanksgiving last year, and it required states to establish greenhouse gas reduction targets for federally funded roadway projects. This came out of the Western District of Kentucky, and the court there sided with the states, providing declaratory relief and finding that the Federal Highway Administration had overstepped their statutory authority. But he stopped short of permanently enjoining enforcement of the rule or vacating it altogether. From the ruling by Judge Benjamin Beaton, who is an appointee of President Donald Trump, he said, even assuming Congress gave the administrator authority to set environmental performance standards that embrace CO2, the administrator exercised that authority in an arbitrary and capricious manner. So some of the opponents of the rule, like Republican North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer, have characterized the efforts by the Biden regime to link vehicular emissions reduction with federal funds. And they call it a thinly veiled effort to push electric vehicles, which, let's be honest, it actually is. They want Americans to buy electric vehicles. They don't want Americans to keep buying gasoline engines, even though gasoline engines are reliable, even though there's gas stations all over America, even though electric vehicles often cost far more, even though the maintenance on electric vehicles is also a lot more. Sure, you don't have an oil change every 3 to 6 months, but you got to get new brake pads every 10 months, or excuse me, every 10,000 miles. But Senator Kevin Cramer continued saying that the National Highway Safety Transportation Administration and the Environmental Protection Agency, among other federal agencies, have promulgated their own regulations that effectively require significant increases in EV production over the coming years. We also know that manufacturers of these electric vehicles are slashing the number of workers that they have on the line simply because people cannot afford to buy electric vehicles and because these vehicles are simply not wanted. I saw a video the other day of a guy who lives in Idaho, and they live out off-grid. They have like a homestead, and they have some solar panels, but let's be honest, it's freaking Idaho. There isn't a lot of sun there, especially in the wintertime. And so he and his wife were trying to figure out, well, we need like a battery backup system. We already have a generator. We basically want to have as much access to power as possible. So they get like 2 to 3 hours of sunshine a day. They make sure the solar panels are soaking it up. They have some batteries, but they need more batteries. So they bought an F-150 Lightning. They figured, hey, this is great. It's got a huge battery pack. We can plug it into the house, and then we can actually run our electricity off of that for like almost a week. Well, the only problem is that the batteries stop working when it gets too cold. And wouldn't you know it, it gets pretty cold in Idaho. So there's all kinds of problems. This is not a permanent, perfect solution. But clearly, this is a gift to China. China is the owner and producer of the mines, which end up being producing the raw material that is used in these batteries. And until we have a different sort of battery power or a different way to store power, there's simply not going to be the need for electric vehicles in the way that they are trying to demand that we need them. So the attorney generals of Kentucky, Alabama, Alaska, Arkansas, Florida, Idaho, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Mississippi, Montana, Nebraska, North Dakota, Idaho, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, Utah, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming all brought this lawsuit against the FWA. In their filing, President Biden's radical environmental agenda has lost touch with reality, and Kentucky families, farmers, and workers are paying the price. That's actually the Republican Kentucky Attorney General Russell Coleman. That was his response to the decision. Like all Americans, Kentuckians love our trucks, cars, and vans. With this victory in court, we are slamming the brakes on the Biden regime politics that make no sense in the Commonwealth. So the final rule has still to specify how much state and local transportation agencies would actually have to reduce emissions. The agency has touted this structure as providing flexibility for subnational governments when it announced the rule back in November. But critics like Senator Cramer have warned that at the time, the regulation is fundamentally unworkable in certain rural regions of America. They have attempted a number of reduction mandates for emissions for federally funded highway projects in the past in 2021, but it was left out of the bipartisan infrastructure law because lawmakers were negotiating the package and they simply couldn't come up with an agreement. But the infrastructure bill contains about $350 billion for federal highway programs, which have to be spent between 2022 and 2026. Now, the FWA FHWA has yet to comment on this. I'm certain that they're not going to leave it there. The federal government is really not all that keen on losing in court, so I'm sure they're probably going to appeal it, and this is going to end up going all the way to the Supreme Court. And in the meantime, we're just going to keep driving gasoline-powered cars, going to keep revving our engines, and going to keep rolling coal as we drive down the highway. All right. So also from yesterday, a federal judge, Judge Mark Scarsi, he's a district judge in California's Central District. He has rejected Hunter Biden, the first son's legal argument that his previous plea agreement was enforceable because he was trying to get his tax charges thrown out of court. If you'll remember, and I'm sure you do, that sweetheart plea agreement gave Hunter Biden immunity from any potential future charges, essentially shielding him from any criminal prosecution for any crimes he may commit now or any time into the future. Specifically, it afforded Hunter the ability to plead guilty for not paying taxes on more than $1.5 million between 2017 and 2018. He would receive probation rather than any prison time like a normal American. In addition, it also included a diversion agreement that gave Hunter immunity from those future charges, including a provision to essentially wipe a potential felony for gun violations from his record. But this was, make no mistake, my friends, a blow to Hunter Biden and not the kind of blow that he's used to getting. This diversion agreement with special counsel David Weiss fell apart back in 2023 because the judge took a bit of a closer look to it. And back in December, David Weiss indicted President Joe Biden's son, unrepentant crack addict Hunter Biden, in California on nine tax violations that include the failure to file tax returns, inflating his business expenses, and then also underestimating his income. In response to that argument to enforce the plea, Judge Scarsi on Monday said that the diversion agreement was null because it fell apart before any preconditions had been met. Judge Scarsi said, having found that the diversion agreement is a contract that binds the parties, but that the parties made the probation officer's signature a condition precedent to its performance, the court turns to defendant's theory of immunity, that the United States' obligation to refrain from prosecuting defendant under Section 215 of the diversion agreement is currently in force. Well, it isn't. The immunity provision is not one exempted from the term of the contract under the survival clause. Now, Abby Lowell is Hunter Biden's attorney. He, of course, had to try to convince Judge Scarsi that President Joe Biden's Justice Department has been targeting his son selectively. Isn't that funny? To think that Hunter Biden or his lawyer could make the argument that because he's the son of the current president, that Justice Department is going after him in a more tough way than they would go after anybody else. It's so obviously the exact opposite of what they're saying. But the judge said Hunter had failed to present a reasonable inference, let alone clear evidence of discriminatory effect and discriminatory purpose. So at the end of the proceeding, it was decided Hunter Biden is going to continue on to trial June 20th of this year. And if convicted, Hunter could face a maximum of 17 years in prison. In total, he faces 42 years in federal prison when you put together all of the nine tax charges and then also the three gun charges. Personally, I hope that they broadcast this on live television. You guys, I got to stand up. I'm starting to think about blood clots in my legs. Okay, that's better. All right, so I have some really good news for you as well. You can say goodbye to Zuckerbucks. Yesterday, we had bad news coming out of Wisconsin. I reached out to Election Watch, and I also reached out to Peter Bernegger about coming on the show. I also reached out to Hot Wisconsin, so hopefully we'll get a reply from them very soon. But despite all of that bad news coming out of Wisconsin, clearly interference and payback for investigative journalists exposing what is, in my opinion, one of the largest money laundering schemes in the modern era. We also now have really good news coming out of Wisconsin because last night the voters of Wisconsin voted to ban the private funding of elections. So that literally means no more Zuckerbucks. Mark Zuckerberg went home last night crying in his beer. probably asking his wife for a little bit of private time. He simply just could not face the music here. But this amendment is going to direct that donations and grants may not be applied for, accepted, expended, or used in connection with the conduct of any primary election or referendum. This is a question that was recently posed to the Wisconsin voters, the people who undoubtedly most often were actually affected by the implementation of Zuckerbucks in that state. And the results show that the ballot passed by a 54.4% to 45.6% margin. What do you want to bet that the 54.4% is conservatives and the 45.6% is Democrats? They never bother to cheat on a single issue like this in a state. They only cheat for much larger federal elections. So Wisconsinites also voted in favor of a second part to the amendment on ballot. Question two, this one mandates that only election officials designated by law may perform tasks in the conduct of primaries, elections, and referendums. That one passed 58.6%. Now, the votes come 4 years after the Center for Technology and Civic Life, the CTCL, gave more than $10 million in grants in Wisconsin during the 2020 election. And that 2020 election, $10 million in grants, it probably did a lot to ensure that Joe Biden fake won that election, at least ensured that they were able to steal that election. Mark Zuckerberg and his wife Priscilla Chan notoriously poured hundreds of millions of Zuckerbucks into CTL for the purpose of getting out the vote in Democrat-leaning areas in the 2020 election. The Democrats are going to have to come up with another way to raise that $10 million. And they're also not going to be able to just implement whoever they want to working in these elections. The Badger State did officially vote for Joe Biden in that year's presidential election. But I think that anybody who pays attention, or even if you're a Wisconsin resident, you're probably asking yourself, you know, how is this possible? How did Joe Biden win this election in 2020? Well, the short answer is he didn't really win it. Obviously, it was stolen. In 2021, oh, and by the way, it was a margin of 20,682 votes. Keep that number in mind, 20,682 votes. In 2021, the state had an opportunity at that time to ban the private funding of elections, but Governor Tony Evers, a Democrat, vetoed that bill that the state legislature had passed. So now the people of Wisconsin have said, guess what, Tony Evers? You can F off. We're going to go ahead and ban that private funding of elections on our own, and there's nothing you can do about it. The governor cannot come in and veto a measure that was put in place by the people. So sorry to tell you, Tony, you're going to have to go ahead and live with it. President Trump obviously was in Wisconsin yesterday, and while he was there, he encouraged voters at his rally in Green Bay while the polls were still open to ban Zuckerbucks, to vote for those ballot questions. And Republicans obviously came out in force. They said, yes, President Trump, we are going to do exactly that. And victory. Wisconsin has spoken, and the message is clear. Elections belong to voters, not out-of-state billionaires. That's coming from the Republican Party chairman, Brian Schimming, in Wisconsin. Thanks to the efforts of the Republican Party of Wisconsin and grassroots organizing, Wisconsinites have turned the page on Zuckerbucks and secured our elections from dark money donors. It's really, really good news. Everybody is celebrating. If you are a resident of Wisconsin and you voted and you want to mention anything about it in the chat, please do let me know. Also, you guys, do me a favor, please hit the like button. If you're on Rumble, please hit the red pill if you're over there on Pilled. All right. So now I actually have two more stories following up on the situation in Wisconsin. Hold on. Where is it? Here it is. Speaking of the election in Wisconsin and New York and Rhode Island and Delaware and Connecticut, Donald Trump won all of the primaries where he was the candidate yesterday. And of course, the primaries have kind of been out of the news for a while because President Trump is already considered to be the presumed nominee for the Republican Party. It's come down to Donald Trump and Joe Biden. RFK Jr. is still in there, but he's not a threat to Donald Trump. Just recently, somebody was asking me what I thought about RFK Jr. still maintaining a presence in the election. And I said, I love his VP pick. Because if he wanted to ensure that self-respecting conservatives did not vote for him, did not siphon votes to him over Donald Trump, well, then he just ensured that he's going to lose. He's going to take votes from Joe Biden and everybody else who cares about America, America first, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, fixing the horrible problems we have in the United States. None of them will be voting for RFK Jr. because of the VP pick that he had. Many of them likely, even before that pick, they were not going to vote for him anyways. But she really sealed the deal. She was a bad choice for him if he was hoping to appeal to conservatives. So RFK, thank you very much, sir. Appreciate what you did there. But Donald Trump went through each and every one of these states yesterday. He swept it. I'm so glad as well, Barine Jane. I knew it was going to happen. You know, I mean, it was quite obvious that, you know, even though he number one, Indiana dad, you're the best brother. Thank you so much for that donation. Yeah, I knew it was only a matter of time, you know, and I'm glad that he didn't choose somebody who was perhaps more overtly conservative, somebody who could be looked at as, you know, ideologically aligned with Donald Trump. This is the thing. People who love Donald Trump love Donald Trump. Even when RFK Jr. joined the race and I said, yeah, I like some of the things about him, but, you know, I don't like plenty of things about him. I knew that he was never a true threat to Donald Trump because people who love Donald Trump want Donald Trump back. People who can objectively look at his first 4 years in office, then compare it to this current state that we are living in under Joe Biden, they understand that if they want that life they had before, if they want to ensure that life for their children, if they want to ensure the survival of the country, they're going to have to bring Donald Trump back. There is simply no two ways about it. So thank God for Donald Trump. And if RFK has the ability to offer anything to Donald Trump once he gets elected, and that's Donald Trump's choice, I'll go ahead and stand by it. Just as long as he's not in charge of the ATF or something like that, or even the EPA. I don't know. Put him on something where his views align with Donald Trump. See if that helps. All right. So we got to talk a little bit about the illegal alien invasion situation, as we do every single day. We got to check in and see what's happening around the world. Around these 50 states. Yesterday, we learned about the Biden plane importation plan, where 90% of those illegals came here to my home state of Florida. No wonder every time I go to Walmart, I can't find a single person who speaks English. And it seems like I'm in the midst of a Cinco de Mayo celebration. Well, we've got an extremely concerning trend that has been discovered in a number of key swing states, Arizona, Pennsylvania, and Texas. We've got record voter registration numbers that have been found to exist in those states, but it's not any voter registration. This, my friends, is voter registration without photo ID. This should be illegal. I don't know how people can register to vote without photo ID, but a significant uptick has been reported in these registrations in these very important states, Arizona, Pennsylvania, and Texas. The conservative advocacy group, End Wokeness, I didn't know that they were a conservative advocacy group. I follow them on Twitter. I just thought it was a dude with a Twitter account. He brought this to light on Tuesday, citing figures that point to a major surge at the start of 2024. Texas has experienced a staggering 1,250,710 photo ID less registrations. Pennsylvania, 580,213. And Arizona, they must already have a whole ton of illegal votes there, as we saw back in 2020. They only have 220,731. But the radical left is more than interested in ensuring that they maintain the fake lead that they have if they're able to actually continue this on. So the Help America Vote Act of 2002, under that, it states that you are mandated to verify the information of newly registered voters. That way, those voters can be verified as citizens of the United States, as real living people, as who they claim to be. But while this act requires verification against state motor vehicle administration databases, Individuals without a driver's license can register using the last four digits of their social security number. As we know, these illegals coming across the border are somehow getting their hands on social security numbers so that they can enter into the workforce. This is not a new phenomenon. This has been happening for the longest time. Remember, I just told you at the beginning of the week, AT&T lost 73 million bits of confidential information on their customers. So that means 73 million people, their birth certificate, excuse me, their social security number, their birth date, their name and address, all of it got leaked out onto the internet. What I forgot to mention the other day when we were talking about that, I did mention that AT&T said it doesn't appear there was a breach. So what does that leave? That leaves the possibility that somebody working at AT&T or one of their partners actually intentionally released that information out there onto the web. Well, what kind of a person would do that? A radical leftist, perhaps, that wants to throw the election, wants to ensure that illegal aliens have access to tens of thousands, millions of social security numbers to pick from? They very likely are all Democrats, Jim Kyle. We don't have that kind of information, though. So to comply with the requirements of Section 303 of the Help America Vote Act, Social Security Administration has developed a new verification system known as the HAVA system. Back in August of 2004, states must only submit a request to us for new voters who do not present. So let me start over again. States must only submit a request to us for new voters who do not present a valid driver's license during the voter registration process. Help America Vote Verification System verifies the accuracy of the name, date of birth, and the last four digits of a social security number submitted and sends an indication of whether our records show the individual as deceased. Well, as long as the person has never been reported dead and you've got a social security number, a birth date, and a name, you can register to vote in anybody's name that you so choose. Notice that it doesn't tell you if they're registered to vote in another state. That one might be helpful, too. Buck Wayne says many Democrat voters have been embalmed or reside in clay jars next to bowling trophies. Oh, N. Braddy was among the 73 million. N. Braddy, tell me, are you currently a customer of AT&T or were you a customer of AT&T? And if you were, how long ago were you a customer? Because I am currently a customer of AT&T, and they have not sent me any sort of notification. All right, so these states, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Illinois, Maryland, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Nevada, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, Oregon, Rhode Island, Utah, Vermont, Virginia, and Washington, all of them issue a driver's license to immigrants if they provide certain documentation. They have to have a foreign birth certificate, they have to have a foreign passport, or a consular card and evidence of current residency in the state. And Braddy, I am current since 2015. Okay, so you've been there for a while. I didn't become an AT&T customer until 2022, and I never had – I've got internet from them. I never had a cell phone. Do you have a cell phone or do you have internet? Or do you have television, I guess? Cherokee, I think we had AT&T for long distance a long time ago too, but it's been many, many years. I am under no contract with AT&T, so it's the best internet that I can get right now. You have Wi-Fi. Okay, so you have internet from them. Okay, all right. So there are mechanisms through which illegal immigrants can obtain social security numbers through their work authorization. Number one, if they are a DACA member, this policy allows for certain individuals who came to the United States as children, the so-called dreamers, and meet several guidelines to request consideration of that deferred action from deportation. These approved for DACA are also eligible for work authorization in the U.S., and with work authorization, they can apply for a social security number. So they are not citizens of the United States, but they can get a social security number and they can still register to vote. My God, I want to know how many times this is happening. if they have temporary protected status. This is granted to certain eligible nationals of countries that are experiencing problems that make it difficult or unsafe for the nationals to be deported back there. Those granted TPS status are also eligible to work for work authorization, and as a result, they can also apply for a Social Security number. Number three. There are other forms of relief. Certain other immigration relief statuses, including asylum or adjustment of status applications, they can also grant eligibility for work authorization and then subsequently a Social Security number. Now, critics, people like me, people like you, we are concerned that this loophole can be exploited by non-citizens, that grants non-citizens the ability to get a driver's license, get a Social Security number, and then they can go ahead and get registered to vote, even though they're not legally eligible to vote. And let's be honest, they don't enforce the laws in the United States any longer if you are an illegal immigrant. So hell, why not? Everybody, let's just go get our voter registration applications and we'll fill them out and we'll make sure that we vote for our favorite candidates. I wonder if these people consider themselves as getting paid to vote for Democrats, because that's essentially what's happening to them. Do you think that anybody that shows up in one of these places and gets themselves all set up on the American on the teat of Lady Liberty and gets all set up, they get a debit card for the month, they get free room and board, they get free medical, they get to work someplace. Maybe they don't even have to work, but they've got residency, they get a Social Security number and a driver's license. And then the next thing you know, they got a voter registration card and they walk into that box and they're going to say, yeah, Joe Biden, I love Joe Biden. Let's go ahead and vote for him. But if we go back to 2011, at that time, Arizona has registered almost 5 million individuals since then. Pennsylvania has also seen over 5 million registrations. Texas has over 24 million registrations. These are all according to the Social Security Administration. So the issue has captured the attention of some high-profile figures. I'm glad that somebody's paying attention, not just us, not just the plebs who really can't do anything about it. Elon Musk is definitely paying attention. He has shared some concerns online. Of course, he has a massive social media following. Maybe we can get some congressmen to actually take a listen and pass some legislation to ensure that people who don't actually have the status or legality to live here, just happen to be here, are not able to pack, who are not able to cast a ballot. So Musk also shared a video last month that was produced by Western Lessman on Joe Biden's purposeful destruction of the U.S. border and American sovereignty. Did he actually share that video? Let's watch.
The Democrat open borders plan to entrench single-party rule, explained in under 2 minutes. One, flood the country with untold millions of illegals by land, sea, and air from all over the world. Enough to eclipse the populations of 36 individual U.S. states so far. Two, prioritize the needs of these millions of non-citizens over the needs of the American citizen, with free flights, buses, hotels, meals, and phones, ensuring their loyalty to the political party that imported them. Three, keep them in the country at all costs, even when they commit violent crime like murder and rape. Attack the language used to describe the criminals, as opposed to the criminals themselves. Slander critics as racist. Four, ensure their privileges are made irrevocable with city and state sanctuary laws that act as population magnets. Codify permanent status and ensure non-cooperation with ICE. 5. Count the non-citizens in the census that will determine congressional apportionment in the House of Representatives. As of now, that would equal 13 extra congressional districts, a tremendous amount of electoral power. 6. Wage a massive, heavily funded lawfare campaign to change state voting laws that legalize mass mail-in ballots, no signature verification, and no proof of citizenship requirements, making it nearly impossible to prove voter fraud. 7. Lock in the permanent voting majority with campaign promises of lavish benefits and permanent privileges, enshrining generational fealty to the Democrat Party. 8. Win elections. 9. Entrenched single-party rule has been achieved. The best part? Your tax dollars are paying for it.
Prophecy. That's exactly what they've done. There's really no other way to say it. Now, since Democrats are mostly in illegal states, both the House and the presidential vote are shifted about 5% to the left, which is enough to change the balance of power. And it's probably the major reason why the Biden regime is ushering in record levels of illegals and doing so few deportations. But as a result of doing that, the Democrats and Joe Biden's regime are paying a price. Every single day I come in this channel and I tell you guys some new horrific story about murderers, rapists, and drug dealers that are plaguing the streets of American cities. And whether it's a leftist American city or a right-leaning American city, the people of those cities are standing up and taking note. Massachusetts, which was protecting a pedophile, an unrepentant pederast rapist in their state, is also protecting an illegal alien who is accused of fentanyl trafficking, and they're also wanted for murder back in their home country of the Dominican Republic. He's a 27-year-old illegal alien, and he crossed the U.S.-Mexico border on an unknown date. He's one of those gotaways. That's the term they use for people who successfully cross into the United States without being detected, without being deterred by Border Patrol. Since Joe Biden took office, we have nearly 2 million known gotaways that have crossed the border. That's 2 million that have not had contact with the United States government, but they know are here anyways. The real, true, quantifiable number of the illegals that are here in the United States without having any sort of contact with American authorities, it's unknowable. We really, truly have no idea. But back in November of 2021, this particular illegal alien fentanyl tracker murderer became wanted in the city of Bonnie, Dominican Republic on these homicide charges. The next month, he was charged with fentanyl trafficking in Newburyport, Massachusetts. This unlawfully present Dominican national fled his home country to avoid a murder trial, ICE said. He made his way to Massachusetts and he's been repeatedly apprehended by local authorities and charged with crimes of violence and drug nature. In December of 2021, the very same illegal alien was charged with strangling and suffocating a family member in his household in West Roxbury, Massachusetts. Guess what? The charges were later dismissed. And then on March 21st, ICE agents finally, by the grace of God, arrested this illegal alien in Saguas, Massachusetts. He still remains in ICE custody pending deportation back to the Dominican Republic. But of course, he's in a cushy American prison and he's getting fed well. He's probably getting to watch television. Maybe he gets to work out. I bet you've got some lonely heart Massachusetts Democrat mother who's sending money to his commissary every month. But it doesn't end there. One thing that President Trump made sure he did yesterday in Michigan, because he was there as well, he had conversations with law enforcement officers, people who could talk to him and inform him about the dire state of our country as a result of the policies of the Biden regime. Now, as I said, the people of this country have stood up. They are taking note. They understand that something is drastically out of whack when Joe Biden and his regime is giving preference to illegal aliens over American citizens, people who are criminals at best and terrorists at worst. We have had so many cases of murder, murder of American citizens, murder of beautiful young women, murder of children, at the hands of these violent criminal animals. Strategic National CEO John Yab is the CEO of a firm that had some of the most accurate polling data back in 2016. And in regard to these two recent murders in Michigan, both of them allegedly at the hands of illegal aliens, it is very, very clearly driving Michiganders back towards President Donald Trump. He posted a memo on Tuesday and he said that the analysis was difficult to write given the circumstances. But he notes it is necessary as a pollster to determine the impacts of current events on our political system. In this memo, he says the immigration issue hitting home in West Michigan is going to fundamentally change the outlook of the 2024 election and put Michigan more firmly in President Trump's corner. Now, Yab predicts the trend is likely to take hold in other states, as it should, in the wake of Biden's failed immigration policies. In Georgia, where Laken Riley was murdered at the hands of a Venezuelan illegal here illegally with false papers and documentation. This illegal alien has been charged with Laken Riley's death. Laken Riley, unfortunately, was misnamed in the midst of Joe Biden's State of the Union. He called her Lincoln Riley. Of course, her parents had to suffer that indignation, further indignity after their beautiful young daughter, a nursing student, was strangled to death and left like a piece of garbage in the middle of a public park. Yob's analysis comes on the heels also of the 25-year-old Ruby Garcia's brutal murder in Grand Rapids, Michigan. As Breitbart reported, Garcia was shot to death and left on the side of U.S. Highway 131, also like a piece of garbage. These illegal alien criminal animals are leaving these women in heaps on the sides of the road rather than giving them any sort of respect at all, because they don't have any respect for us. They don't have any respect for America or for American citizens. They see us in the way a pirate would see us. Go back to the high seas of the Middle Ages and pirates boarding the ships of warring nations. They would rape, rob, pillage. They would throw the sailors over the edge. They would take the and plunder the booty, take the gold, take the jewels, take the supplies. And the people they killed would have absolutely no intrinsic value. Human life means nothing to these people. Police have actually arrested 25-year-old Brandon Ortiz Vite. Guess what? He's an illegal alien, and he's here from Mexico. Well, he murdered Miss Garcia. He's been charged with felony murder, open murder, carjacking, carrying a concealed weapon, and felony possession of a firearm. Andre says, but then the Dems want to act like they have no idea why an attack on the country happened, or blame whites and anyone against their agenda on the increase in crime. It makes me sick. It makes all of us sick, Andre. Rick Acer says they're destroying the British Islands. It's systematic. You, U.S., it's corporate treasonous crime. The Nazis done this. It's ethnic cleansing. Yes, and only this time it is. You know, I wonder how much of it actually truly is ideological, because, you know, they're aligning themselves with people from other nations and, you know, supposedly advocating for people of color and immigrants. But really, it's just a group of useless idiots, because if they are successful in ethnically cleansing Americans from America, then the people who are left are simply going to be the next group to get controlled and to be forced to be brought to heel by the elites that are organizing this right now. So Ortiz Vite, he previously had already been deported from the United States back in 2020 by President Donald Trump. But of course, he illegally crossed the southern border again at an unknown date. He became just one of many millions of gotaways who have entered since Joe Biden took up residency at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. But the issue of illegal immigrants murdering people in Grand Rapids is now a national story that is not going to go away anytime soon. If you are from Michigan, Grand Rapids used to be a really beautiful and safe city. Not anymore. A lot of cities in Michigan are not places that I would want to be caught dead. You know, I did a little bit of research on some of the most dangerous cities in the United States, and Michigan has like three or four of them. Gomez, like Ortiz Vite, also illegally entered the U.S. as a gotaway. Suburban families, even as far north as West Michigan, are now finding out that the open southern border is in their backyard, and they don't like it. They are about to hear about it over and over again in the media. Yob also writes that Trump single-handedly and successfully realigned the electoral makeup in Michigan back in the 2016 election. He brought together working class voters and union households who had for a long time been a part of that Democrat coalition. Those guaranteed votes for the Democrat Party simply just do not exist anymore. This realignment in 2016 ensured that Trump became the first Republican to win Michigan in a presidential election since 1988. I would say he did it again in 2020, only they stole it, and he's going to do it again in 2024. He overperformed in blue-collar areas in that state, such as places like Macomb County, mid-Michigan, and northern Michigan. He earned the votes of auto workers, and he's done it again. And he also earned the votes of working families, taking that coalition away from the Democrats and leaving them as the liberal elitist party of the East and West Coasts. Keep getting a piece of lemon stuck in my straw. Okay. So at the same time, this political realignment also led to Trump underperforming in Oakland County and the southeast sector of the state, also in Kent County, which is the home of Grand Rapids. These voters are often referred to as soccer moms in the early 2000s, and they're ready to come home to the GOP as security moms, Yob writes. The 2000 and 2004 campaigns included the famous term soccer moms to describe more establishment Republicans. Candidates like George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush prioritized and appealed to these voters with varying degrees of success, despite the difficult issue of abortion. Now the question, moms, is do you want yourself and your children to be carjacked, raped, and then shot in the head and dumped off on the side of the road? If the answer is yes, go ahead, continue to vote Democrat. If the answer is no, then I would suggest voting for Donald Trump, because the answer is clear. The answer is survival. If you don't value your own life, if you don't value the lives of your children, go ahead, continue voting for Joe Biden or whoever is the idiot talking head coming out of the Democrat Party. The strategy worked well in bringing together establishment West Michigan voters to Republicans, but they ultimately failed as statewide candidates in Michigan because of their underperformance with blue-collar working families. Well, there's nothing like an illegal alien killing your child to bring people together, whether you work for, I don't know, a bank or you work for the auto industry. Everybody can process that equation right there. There's no racism in that equation. The massive problem at the border and corresponding media attention is now on the verge of turning these groups, the soccer moms and the security moms, into the same group. In West Michigan, it will also change the perspective in this presidential race. The heat of the immigration crisis is going to turn up to a boil this week as attention builds on the sentencing of Bernal Sosa and today's arrest of Ortiz Vite for murder. One case is a terrible tragedy. Two cases is an unacceptable trend that voters will not easily accept. And there are more cases coming, my friends. That trend is no longer hidden in the shadows. Simply put, this immigration crisis is likely to move historically centrist Republicans in West Michigan who were torn in recent presidential elections, firmly placing them in the column for President Donald Trump. So I am pretty excited about this. In 2016, Trump won Kent County by 148,000 votes Hillary Clinton's 138,000 votes. But in 2020, Biden officially beat Trump in Kent County by more than 20,000 votes. So likely Trump still won Kent County. But this is for sure going to be a changeup of the electoral makeup of the state of Michigan, because, again, it's not simply about mean tweets. It's not simply about orange man bad. It's not simply about racism and whatnot. This is about issues of life and death. And if you value your life or you value the life of the people you love, then the only choice is Donald Trump. We're going to talk about this and so much more when we come back on the other side of the break. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, bad news. It sounds like the Fed has taken the warnings of a recession are growing louder as we near sell in May and go away. Citibank warned the soft landing dream is over. The U.S. economy is headed for a recession in the middle of 2024. Morgan Stanley warns a U.S. dollar regime shift could threaten stocks. And meanwhile, the Fed's most trusted recession indicator is flashing code red, because every recession since 1945 has been preceded by a yield curve inversion. Meanwhile, the M2 money supply is meaningfully contracting for only the fifth time since 1870. All signs appear to point to a sizable downturn for the Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ. Now, meanwhile, gold prices have been hitting all-time highs, and the rally is far from over. Now, y'all know silver is always late to the party, but once it finds momentum, it can easily outperform gold. So protect your retirement with gold or place a bullish bet on silver. Call the proud Americans of the Patriot Gold Group today before it's too late. Just mention Red Pill 78 and this show, Red Pill News, and you're always going to get best-in-class service from Patriots Protecting Patriots. Patriot Gold Gold Group has the No Fee for Life IRA, where your IRA or 401k can be in physical gold and silver, and you just might be eligible for that No Fee for Life IRA on qualifying rollovers. So give them a call today at 888-857-6092 and get your free investor guide today. Patriot Gold Group is a Consumer Affairs top-rated gold IRA dealer for 7 years in a row. Call them today at 888-857-6092. And when you support my sponsors, you support this channel. All right, welcome back. So driving this point home even more about the preferential treatment that illegal alien criminals are getting over and above American citizens. As these gotaways enter the United States, sell drugs to your children, drive-by shootings, carjackings, murdering and raping your daughters, Joe Biden and his regime are, instead of being concerned for the American people, instead of being concerned for the safety, security, tranquility of your children, instead of ensuring and campaigning for your daughters not to be raped and shot in the head, instead they are upset with Donald Trump for referring to illegal aliens as animals, as Donald Trump did when speaking at this rally. This was at his Michigan rally. And you have to say, two murders by illegal aliens, it resonated with the voters in that state. Now, obviously, the people who were there at Donald Trump's rally were already there to hear Donald Trump. They were already excited about Donald Trump. But this message is getting out. And even if the mainstream media doesn't like what Trump is saying, they're going to report on it. And the Americans who still don't have their mind made up are going to look at this messaging and it will resonate with them as well. They look at a young woman, a beautiful, vibrant young woman with her entire life ahead of her, strangled and defiled in a public park in Georgia. And they see what the Biden regime is discussing. They're not discussing the tragic loss of Laken Riley's life. They're instead discussing the racism of Donald Trump for calling her murderer an animal. So President Trump, speaking about the murder of Laken Riley, said that she was killed by an illegal Venezuelan animal. An illegal Venezuelan immigrant, Jose Ibarra. He called him an illegal alien animal, and he added that the Democrats don't want him to use that term. Well, falling right into Donald Trump's trap, the Biden-Harris HQ account tweeted a clip of Trump talking but removed key context to cut the video in a way that misled voters into thinking Trump was talking about illegal immigrants more broadly, which is what they always do. The 22-year-old nursing student in Georgia who was barbarously murdered by an illegal alien animal. The Democrats say, please don't call them animals. They're humans. I said, no, they're not humans. They're animals. So then Biden-Harris edited that statement to say Democrats said, please don't call immigrants animals. I said, no, they're not humans. They're animals. Social media users, however, responded to the tweet with the president's full comments, adding the context that the campaign had duplicitously removed. Crazy how the Biden campaign account can push lies like this all day and never be fact-checked, Tim Young said. And then dropped the actual Trump quote. Republican Florida Representative Byron Donalds tweeted out a compilation of various networks, including CNN and MSNBC, claiming that Trump had called illegal immigrants animals. Fake news alert, Donalds tweeted. Last night, Democrats and media tried to dupe the American people again. Trump called Laken Riley's barbaric killer and other illegal alien murderers like him animals. And that is the way it goes. But the American people understand this. The American people are paying attention, and they are not going to take their eyes off the ball this time. I care about myself. I care about my family. I care about my child. I care about my children, and I care about this country. And these illegal alien animals that are coming here and using our country as some sort of backdrop for their illegal activity, the people who are coming here and murdering and raping and taking advantage of the goodwill of idiotic Democrats. It's simply something that I can't abide, and it's something that cannot be allowed to continue. And I truly do believe this is what's going to decide the election come November. Now, Nebraska and their governor have just backed a conservative-led effort to award all of the state's electoral votes to the presidential statewide winner. That means Donald Trump would get all of the electoral votes and Joe Biden would get none. So Nebraska Governor Jim Pillen has backed this effort to award all of the state's electoral votes to whichever presidential candidate wins the state statewide. So Nebraska has already been a strong Republican stronghold for many years and a place where Donald Trump is fairly certain to be the winner. The state system, as well as Maine's, for awarding electoral votes has, however, been at the odds with the rest of the country by instead awarding those votes based on the congressional district as opposed to the winner-takes-all statewide popular vote. So theoretically, a presidential candidate could win the state but also lose one electoral vote if their opponent won in a congressional district like Omaha. So, for example, Barack Obama won a single electoral vote in 2008 and Joe Biden won the same in 2020. So here's how it goes. In all but two states, Maine and Nebraska, electoral votes are winner take all, as the candidate winning the popular vote normally receives all of those states' votes. However, you still got Maine and Nebraska who are using that congressional split method, which allows them to allocate two electoral votes to the state's popular vote winner and then the one electoral vote to the popular vote winner in each congressional district. So this allows the congressional swing district in the Omaha metro area a single vote that all Democrats have won since 1991, in 2008 by Barack Obama and again in 2020 by Joe Biden. So while candidates need those 270 votes to win, under a scenario where Biden only wins the three northern swing states and the other uncontested blue states, a loss in Nebraska's second district could result in a 269-269 tie. Kind of interesting, and it raises the stakes just a little bit. So I like it. Let's go ahead and do it. Let's make it as difficult as possible. Now, despite all of this bad press that the Biden regime is getting, despite all of the reactions from the people that support Donald Trump, for some reason, the Biden campaign is campaigning on the fact that they seem to think they can flip Florida blue in the 2024 election. This is obviously a very misguided and also a pretty bold statement that they've made, because Florida is solidly a red state. It went for Trump in 2016. It went for Trump in 2020. And the state has only become more Republican since that time. So it's kind of hard to tell if this is some sort of wishful thinking, if the Biden people are actually serious about this, or are they just trying to sound like they got a bigger pair of balls than they actually do. President Biden's campaign believes he can swing solidly red Florida into the blue. The Biden team is claiming it can beat presumptive Republican nominee former President Trump due to his ongoing legal troubles and financial penalties. Make no mistake, Florida is not an easy state to win, but it is a winnable one for President Biden, especially given Trump's weak, cash-strapped campaign and serious vulnerabilities within his coalition. This is Biden's campaign manager, Julie Chavez Rodriguez. She wrote this in a memo to her staff. Rodriguez went on to say that Florida is a state where President Biden has a compelling story of results. Trump and Rick Scott's extreme agenda is making Floridians' lives worse. I don't know about that. Are you sure about that?
You sure about that? You sure about that? You sure about that?
Jim Kyle says Fox was pushing that this afternoon. Well, if Fox is pushing it, you know it's BS. So the Biden team's efforts to flip Florida is likely an uphill battle. And I'll be perfectly honest with you guys. I don't think that in any way, shape, or form are they going to be able to do this. I don't think it's going to be possible for them to flip Florida. And so this is just going to be another pipe dream, which forces them to spend a lot of money. The people living down here in Florida moved here because of the policies of Joe Biden. We wanted to get as far away from that sort of Washington, D.C. elite aesthetic as possible. Florida and Texas, we're looking for freedom. We're looking for fun in the sun. We want to get away from the sort of politics, business as usual in Washington, D.C. And that doesn't mean that anybody here is going to be likely supporting Joe Biden. This is going to be 100% a state that once again flips for Donald Trump. They're not going to flip for anybody else. All right. Now, this is kind of a jab in the eye that President Trump made at Joe Biden as a result of the Transgender Day of Visibility. During the course of his campaigning and his rallies yesterday, he has declared the November Election Day to be Christian Visibility Day. Clearly the exact opposite of Joe Biden's declaration of the Transgender Day of Visibility on March 31st, which just happened to coincide with Easter. Election Day, November 5th, will be the most important day in the history of our country. It will also be Christian Visibility Day, the biggest turnout of Christians in the history of our country. And I think that he's absolutely right. There is no way that it's going to be anything other than that. People are going to be running to the polls to get as far away from Joe Biden as they possibly can. We're all going to be glued to the TV. We're going to be glued. Hopefully you'll be glued to my channel. We'll be doing live election returns once again. And I cannot wait. Cannot wait. January 20th. President Trump said it himself. Starting January 20th of 2025, we roll back all of these horrible policies that Joe Biden has put into place. Every single draconian measure, every effort to weaken America, our sovereignty, our security. We're going to start deporting illegal alien animals on a mass scale. We're going to focus on one thing and one thing only. And that, my friends, is making America great again. Now, recently I told you about the jury instructions that Judge Eileen Cannon had given to the jury members in President Trump's classified documents trial. At the time that those were announced, talking heads on the left were not happy because it was clear that Judge Eileen Cannon essentially had decided the jury's mind for them. Not in a bad way. All she did was explicitly state the legal precedent surrounding the questions in this case. Now, Jack Smith is also not very happy about that. He's actually kind of threatened her in a recent filing in response to that. Vegas Deplorable 26 says Priscilla Chan, any relation to Elvis Chan? It's a fairly common name. I would say probably not, but I've never actually looked into it. I want to say Priscilla Chan is like a Chinese national. Like she actually moved here from China. But Elvis Chan, he's like a multi-generational American. Let's take a look. Okay. Well, I mean, she's at least American right now. Let me see. Wow. Nothing's working. Huh. Well, looks like I'm going to have to reboot my computer if I'm going to get any of this stuff to work that I don't already have pulled up. I'm going to say probably not. I mean, they might be distantly related, but it's not like they're brother and sister or something. Otherwise, I think that would have already come out. All right. So Special Counsel Jack Smith has rebuked Judge Eileen Cannon. He said that her request rests on fundamentally flawed legal premise. I would say the exact opposite is true. But Eileen Cannon instructed both parties to file proposed jury instructions engaging with two scenarios involving the Presidential Records Act and its distinction between personal and presidential records. Jack Smith said in his response that accepting the legal premise in the scenarios would be pure fiction and the resulting jury instructions would distort the trial. Well, I mean, they would give Donald Trump a fair trial and we could get it out of the way as soon as possible. The court should be aware at the outset that Trump's entire effort to rely on the Presidential Records Act is not based on any facts other than the facts presented in the Presidential Records Act, Jack Smith. It is a post hoc justification that was concocted more than a year after he left the White House. And his invocation in this court of the PRA is not grounded in any decision he actually made during his presidency to designate as personal any of the records charged in the superseding indictment. Now, if you don't remember, Judge Cannon gave the jury two scenarios. First, she stated that the jury is permitted to examine a record retained by a former president in his or her personal possession at the end of his or her presidency and make a factual finding as to whether the government has proven beyond a reasonable doubt that it is personal or presidential using the definitions set forth in the Presidential Records Act. Essentially, read the Presidential Records Act and then make the decision based upon it. Because the second scenario says that a president, this is from the Presidential Records Act, has sole authority under that act to categorize records as personal or presidential during his or her presidency. And the other important thing is that a court cannot review such a categorization decision. Thank you to the Presidential Records Act. And by virtue of that fact, all of the records that Donald Trump kept in his possession could be considered personal, because when he took them, he was president of the United States of America, and he is not required in any way to justify that or check it with anyone else before doing so. However, Jack Smith was not happy. He said the jury instructions based on that second scenario put forth by Judge Cannon would amount to nothing more than a recitation of Trump's PRA defense as presented in his motion to dismiss, and would result in directing a verdict against the government, as it should be. Jack Smith, you are wrong. So Trump argued in a motion to dismiss that the Presidential Records Act precludes judicial review of the president's record-keeping practices and decisions. Sounds to me like President Trump and his legal team have a better grasp on the American judicial system than Jack Smith does, because Jack Smith seems to think that the Presidential Records Act is fiction. It doesn't actually exist. Now, Smith told Cannon that she could deny Trump's pending motion to dismiss and adopt preliminary jury instructions as proposed by the government. If, however, the court does not reject that erroneous legal premise, it should make that decision clear now, long before jeopardy attaches, to allow the government the opportunity to seek appellate review. So basically, Jack Smith is going to try to fight this before they even get to the courtroom. He's going to take this to the appellate court, and he's going to ask the appellate court to force Judge Eileen Cannon to try this case in the way that he wants it to be tried, which clearly is going to put President Trump at a significant risk. It's also going to change the very nature of the arguments that he's able to make in that case. So pray for Eileen Cannon, pray for President Trump, and pray for a swift end to this unfair legal maneuvering by Jack Smith. Let's also check in with what's happening in Alvin Bragg's case, the so-called hush money case that's taking place in New York City. It turns out, when you take a look at the actual evidence, that there is no crimes that have been committed. And I feel like that was enumerated pretty openly and honestly from the very start of this case, because when Alvin Bragg released that indictment, legal experts all over the country were taking a look and saying, where's the crime? Where's the crime? I don't see anything illegal here. It's just Alvin Bragg saying, hey, something's illegal. I'm going to go ahead and charge him for it. We're going to go to trial, and then we'll figure it out. So this is the case. The accounting entries that Alvin Bragg is looking at were made years ago. And guess what? There's a statute of limitations in the state of New York, and the statute of limitations also ended years ago. Hunter Biden and the DOJ waited until the statute of limitations passed before addressing his tax crimes. With President Trump, the Soros-backed Bragg ignores the statute of limitations, which had passed 4 years ago. And instead, he made these crimes up out of thin air, just plucked them and threw them onto the page. Now, Alvin Bragg, no, wait a second. There is something missing here. Here we go. All right. So the indictment is BS for a number of reasons. Let me see. No, why does this not work? That's so weird. All right. So first of all, they say the timing of the activities, the timing of the activities. So the activities that President Trump is actually accused of committing were charged at a time when President Trump had handed his multi-billion dollar organization over to his children. He was actually president of the United States. He wasn't in charge of any of that stuff. Since he wasn't running the companies at the time of those events, how can he be charged for events that took place in his actual companies? He wasn't controlling the operations. Therefore, he did not have anything to do with any financial activities taking place inside of them. And then also the fact that remains that none of the activities that took place while President Trump had handed over control of his businesses were actually crimes. And this is why Alvin Bragg never listed any crimes in the indictment either. Now, it was even asked of him. The indictment does not specify or say what those crimes were, what laws were broken. And Bragg said the indictment doesn't specify those laws because the law does not require so. And that doesn't make any sense because we have something called due process. You have the right to face your accuser and you have the right to defend yourself. How is President Trump supposed to defend himself against crimes that he doesn't even know that he's being actually charged with? So let's give a hypothetical. Even if President Trump was actually running his companies at the time that these accounting entries were reportedly performed, he would have absolutely had nothing to do with them in the first place. He wasn't the accountant. He wasn't actually overseeing day-to-day operations. He would have been the CEO. But at this time, he was the CEO of the United States of America. So many people are taking a look at this case, and they understand that a billion-dollar business is not going to be mismanaged or financially managed or micromanaged by the CEO themselves. And the CEO is not the one who's making these accounting entries. He's not even one who is making these day-to-day decisions on who to write checks to. So Alvin Bragg is a total schlockmaster. These accounting errors were made years ago, or these so-called accounting errors were made years ago. The statute of limitations has long since passed. Bragg is claiming that the 2017 activities somehow impacted the 2016 election. How is it that the future events are affecting past events? That's just not how time works, unless he's also claiming that President Trump is in possession of time travel technology, and he hasn't told any of us. Jim Kyle says, I can't believe over 4,000 here and so little donations. Well, thank you very much, Jim. I really appreciate it. If you guys do donate to the channel, you are being directly responsible for keeping me on the air, and I just want you to know how much I appreciate it. Let me also say thank you to Esther G13 over on Pilled, who says, love you, Zach. I love you too, Esther. NetFolks1, thank you for the cookie. Thank you to Sean Joe for two cookies and for dropping a one-month bronze tier subscription. Ivy Mechton picked that one up, and then Sean Joe dropped another one for TSC90. Then Sean dropped two more cookies. Esther said, you're killing me, Zach. Thank you very much. Thick Ray says, hashtag the truth is loose, and dropped one, two, three cookies. Candylicious dropped a cookie as well. I really, really appreciate it. All right. Even if you are only able to watch the program, if you wouldn't mind hitting that like button over on Rumble, you can help me get onto the Rumble leaderboard and help me get my broadcast in front of more eyes. The only thing that gets me to the Rumble leaderboard is the number of likes. Again, 4,200 people here on Rumble, only 633 likes. I would sincerely appreciate it if you guys joined that select group of people who supported the show by just hitting that like button. You don't have to do anything else. You can just help me get this show in front of other people's eyes. If we go back to the time of this supposed crime, no auditors would ever identify or make the claims that were made by Brad. Certainly not in a billion-dollar business. The entries that Bragg is pointing to are so small that they likely would have never been found by an auditor. And the only way that they were found is because Alvin Bragg and his team likely were pouring through every single line of Donald Trump's books to try to find something that they could match up with a supposed crime that they wanted to convict him of. If these were the issues, then management would have made adjustments. But these adjustments would not be impacting taxes. They would not impact income because they were reported in the wrong bucket and they did not impact the bottom line. So adjustments happen all the times in accounting. And just because an adjustment is made, it doesn't mean that it's a crime. And if it was a crime, Alvin Bragg likely would have been able to put it into the text of the indictment. Now, no auditor in 2022 would go back to 2017 and locate $100,000 in entries in the books of a billion-dollar business. Auditors rely on the prior year's work to look at the current year. I don't know of any other situation where an auditor has gone back 5 years when performing an audit. It's simply not the way that business is done. And again, if they did, any issues that were identified at worst would be posted as adjusting entries. Again, these are not crimes. Even if the IRS had gone back and looked and seen this $100,000 that was in the wrong column, they might have requested that somebody file an amended taxes. I mean, it's happened before, probably millions of times. But again, it's not a criminal action. Hey, Sean Joe. Sean Joe's also donating over there on Rumble. Man, I really appreciate it. Thank you very much, Sean Joe. Appreciate that. Well, Freya says you might want to make it the announcement about how you can thumbs up on Roku and Fire Stick. You can. You have to use the remote, and you just go up and you click it with the remote. I don't have a Roku and the Fire Stick, but I know that it's possible for you to do that. You don't just have to be in a browser on your computer or on your phone. If you are on one of those streaming platforms, you can use your remote. You can just press the up button and then over when you get to the line that has the thumbs up, and then you just click the OK button or the center button when you're on that thumbs up, and then you give me a thumbs up, and then, you know, that's your admission price for the day. I would say it's a fairly good price of admission. Just hit the like button, and that's all that I ask of you. Now, it's also likely that no one in history has ever been charged with a felony for receiving an invoice from a vendor. This is simply not something that has any basis in history or reality. The felonies that Alvin Bragg lists are cases related to these 11 so-called payments allegedly made to the crooked perpetually lying Michael Cohen. You have 11 invoices, 12 vouchers, and 11 checks or wires. Invoices are received from vendors. They're not made by anyone in the Trump administration. Trump has no control over the receipt of invoices. Someone sends a bill to a company. That bill is then received by the accounting division, and then they go ahead and make good on it. So charging President Trump for a felony for receiving invoices is like charging an American a felony for receiving a letter in the mail. Free Lumby, thank you very much. Appreciate your hard work, Zach and fam. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay. Yes. Thank you very much. Let's see. President Trump also didn't commit a felony when one of his many accountants made entries in the books. Again, that's why you have an accountant. The accountant handles the books. They handle all of the accounting. You subcontract that work out, or you hire someone to do it on a regular basis. And that way, if something does go wrong, then they can make an adjustment and they give you advice on how you're supposed to handle it. TZ Burton says Alvin Bragg took Bill Gates' racist math. 1 = 24. I bet black drug dealers know how to count. Oh, yeah. If you're a drug dealer, you definitely know the maths. You know how to count, because otherwise your measurements are going to be all off, and then you're going to be owing some Colombians a lot of money. And that's not the kind of thing you want. Going to find yourself in a bathtub getting your arms chopped off with a chainsaw. And again, people are not infallible. Accountants make mistakes. If they do make a mistake, they can file an amendment. All right. There is a process to do this that does not involve the criminal court system. President Trump also having ownership of this multi-billion-dollar organization means that likely he knew absolutely nothing about the day-to-day operations of those books. That's why you hire an accountant. This is BS. Nobody in their right mind is going to look at this case and say that they feel it has any sort of merit to it. Take a look at this. Even Michael Avenatti is now voicing his support for Donald Trump. John says, okay, I've seen enough. I can now confirm we do, in fact, live in a simulation. Take a look at this. Michael Avenatti, he's in prison right now, okay? And I guess he's got a phone because he's tweeting. He says, we can't be hypocrites when it comes to the First Amendment. It is outrageous that Cohen and Daniels can do countless TV interviews, post on social media, make money on bogus documentaries, all by talking shit about Trump, but he's gagged and threatened with jail if he responds. I never thought I would see the day where Michael Avenatti, the sworn lifelong enemy of Donald Trump, would tweet out something in support of Donald Trump. But it has come. Brian Murphy says, hey, folks, give a little something to this show, because not only is Zach the original OG Indie Patriot Media taking on the deep state evil, but he is a good guy. Keep up the good fight, Zach. Brian, thank you very, very much. I sincerely appreciate you, brother. Thank you very much. So it goes to show you that just because you're a rabid leftist, just because you're a criminal, that doesn't mean that you want to see other people fail or you want to see people unjustly treated by the U.S. judicial system. Now, it could be argued maybe Michael Avenatti is angling for a pardon or something like that. But let's be really clear here. Donald Trump is not going to pardon Michael Avenatti just because he tweeted some support for him. But I think he probably will get a chuckle out of it. So Michael Avenatti is specifically referring to this other case here, the very same case in in New York City, the so-called hush money case, where the judge in that case is a rabid leftist. His daughter is a rabid leftist, and she operated a Twitter account where she was advocating for putting President Trump in jail. She also was raising money off of putting Trump in jail. President Trump simply called attention to it and said that it was a conflict of interest. Well, that's not all it is. It turns out that it's just a little bit more. Last night, Jesse Waters did a segment about Judge Juan Merchan, the judge that Donald Trump was referencing in those tweets, who recently put an extended gag order on President Trump so that President Trump couldn't talk about Juan Merchan's family's financial ties in this current case against him. And Judge Merchan, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many other people, should be impeached for his lawlessness. Let's go ahead and take a listen to the clip.
Judge Juan Merchan, who's presiding over Trump's so-called hush money case in New York, slapped an even bigger gag order on the former president last night. Trump is banned from talking about the judge's family. Why? Because the judge's family was paid by the Biden campaign. The judge's family is currently being paid by Adam Schiff over $10 million. Adam Schiff, this is the guy who conspired with Michael Cohen, the star witness in this case. Trump isn't allowed to say that the judge's daughter is a Democrat consultant whose clients, the Biden campaign, Adam Schiff, are fundraising off Trump's indictment. The judge's family's getting rich off Trump trials, and he's presiding over one. And if Trump's convicted, his family financially benefits. And instead of recusing because of a glaring conflict of interest, the judge is gagging Trump for pointing out the conflict of interest. Even Michael Avenatti says it's nuts. The lawyer tweeting this from prison. We can't be hypocrites when it comes to the First Amendment. It's outrageous that Cohen and Daniels can do countless TV interviews, post on social, and make money on bogus documentaries, all by talking ish about Trump. But he's gagged and threatened with jail if he responds. The judge is threatening to put Trump in jail for pointing out that his liberal family's getting rich off this trial, and richer if he's convicted.
This is the very definition of corruption. This incestuous relationship that the Biden regime has with all of the judicial officials and the legal officials that are currently prosecuting President Trump. The only one that I'm certain they don't have their hands around is Judge Eileen Cannon. Judge Cannon is the only one who's treating President Trump fairly. The only one who seems to understand what the law actually says and how it is supposed to be implemented. Everyone else clearly seems to have lost the plot. And the only thing that makes sense in that equation is that they and their family members are likely being enriched as a result of the actions they're taking against President Trump. It's patently ridiculous that Donald Trump points out an obvious conflict of interest, and the judge responds not by addressing that conflict of interest, but by forcing Donald Trump to keep his mouth shut because he would rather have people not pay attention to the truth of this matter.
Media who doesn't support the First Amendment or care about corruption covers it this way.
The judge overseeing Donald Trump's hush money trial just expanded a gag order forbidding the defendant and former president from attacking his own family.
He doesn't just take his right to due process. He smears the judge. He harasses the judge's daughter.
President Trump, our former chief executive, is using the bully pulpit that comes with being a former president to put people in grave danger. Quite apart from his attacks.
In case you don't know, that's Norm Eisen right there. Norm Eisen is the architect of the Purple Revolution, which was implemented when Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton walked on stage in their royal purple regalia to give a concession speech. The speech that she failed to give the night before when she was too drunk and angry to walk out on stage because she never thought she would lose to Donald J. Trump.
The judge's daughter, which are totally uncalled for.
The judge's daughter isn't seven. She's 34. He's not attacking her. He's just saying what she does for a living. How's that an attack? He just wants a new judge, one whose family isn't funded by Democrats. Ned Ryan is the founder of American Majority.
Do you guys think that exists? I mean, is that possible in a corrupt state like New York for Donald Trump to receive a judge to oversee a trial like this that isn't already bought and paid for by the Democrat machine? I personally don't think it is. The American judicial system is so hopelessly corrupt and infected with the rot of greed, avarice, and disgusting anti-ethical behavior. Now, a prominent attorney has in an appalling violation of the code of ethics gone on CNN to speak publicly about pending legal matters. Now, Christina Layla had reported that Judge Walton, who was a Bush appointee, had spoken with CNN's Caitlin Collins on Thursday after receiving threats that he had received after he called Trump a charlatan and rendered excessive punishment on January 6th defendants. Thank you, darling. Fredo Awakening says, Mohap. Thank you very much, Fredo. Mohap to you. Good Mohap to you, sir. I just spilled my water and it almost went on my board. Okay. He said, I've had more threats than what used to be the case. Even Caitlin Collins concluded, it's rare that we get to hear from a sitting federal judge. Well, it's because they're not supposed to be out there talking about this stuff. Caitlin Collins asked Judge Walton, I'm wondering what made you speak out tonight and speak publicly? He said, I think it's important in order to preserve our democracy that we maintain the rule of law. I think it's important that we judges speak out. Caitlin Collins repeatedly asked Judge Walton about Trump's statements on Judge Juan Merchan and his daughter, because President Trump obviously had said the daughter of this far left judge who had just hit him with a gag order was receiving payments for their work in the Biden regime. Trump called on New York Judge Juan Merchan to recuse himself because his daughter represents crooked Joe Biden. Kamala Harris, Adam Shifty Schiff, and a number of other radical leftists. Now, an ex account that belonged to Lauren Merchan, and that has actually been confirmed that it belonged to her, posted that picture as their avatar of President Trump behind Judge. Now, that has since been changed to a picture of Kamala Harris. But on Tuesday, the Article 3 Project filed a complaint against Judge Reggie Walton as a result of his CNN appearance. Article 3 Project founder Mike Davis discussed that ethics complaint. Mike Davis argues that Judge Walton violated judicial canons when he spoke with CNN, and he possibly tainted the jury pool. This is the latest example of Democrat judges violating their oaths. And on Tuesday, they filed that complaint against Judge Walton. Mike Davis said his goal is for Judge Walton to be reprimanded and to send a very clear message to other judges that they cannot take off their political robes and climb into the political arena. Again, every single one of these justices is compromised in one fashion or another. Judicial ethics means absolutely nothing to them. They don't care as long as they get Trump at the end of the day. Now, this was an interesting one. An attorney who is currently arguing to disbar Jeffrey Clark, President Trump's attorney and former attorney and a RICO defendant over the election fraud claims, has called Georgia Secretary of State a corrupt one. So listen to this. Never ask a question to which you don't already know the answer. This is a well-known adage that is currently used in legal courtroom proceedings. The reason being is it could result in unexpected harm to a case. Now, this became pretty clear during yesterday's Washington, D.C.-based disbarment hearing of former Trump DOJ official and co-RICO defendant in Fulton County, Jeffrey Clark. Kitty White, thumbs up, and thank you so much for the donation. I really, really appreciate it, Kitty. So Garland Favorito of Voter Georgia was being cross-examined, and the counsel for the Office of Disciplinary Counsel asked him, so in the things that you've talked about today, can you list for us the ones which you believe are evidence of electoral fraud having been committed? Well, Favorito, since this has been his life for the last several years, responded by firing off numerous findings throughout his years-long investigation. Let's go through them, shall we? How about the original ballot images in about 70 counties had been destroyed in spite of the laws requiring that they be maintained? Well, how about the analysis of Fulton County ballot images having been electronically altered before the certification in 2020, which has still not been properly investigated? What about the fact that there were at least 8,000 double-copied ballots in Chatham County, or that there were 8,000 double scanned ballots statewide? Now, Favorito admits this may not be fraud, but rather there could be errors or a mixture of fraud and errors, but we have no way of knowing unless it is investigated. But as we have seen, the federal and state governments of a number of different places have deemed the mere question of the legitimacy of an election, asking for an investigation, suggesting that an investigation should take place. Well, that, my friends, is now not only grounds to be disbarred, but it's also grounds to be brought up on criminal charges. In the case of Fulton County, Georgia, RICO charges. Now, the counsel for the Office of Disciplinary Counsel interrupted Garland Favorito at that point, and he asked specifically for examples of fraud that are in the public record and not something that he has investigated and uncovered. Well, Favorito responds that there were mail-in ballots that were not folded from being mailed, nor were they printed on the correct paper stock. They were marked with toner from a printer rather than a writing instrument, and according to senior poll managers' sworn affidavits being used in court cases right now. Favorito also pointed out that these were known not just before January 3rd, but before December 3rd of 2020. So then the ODC counsel asked, there were 100 of those ballots, correct? Favorito's answer? No one knows how many ballots there were because we've spent 3 years in court trying to get those ballots as public record. We actually appealed our case to the Georgia Supreme Court. We won the case in the Georgia Supreme Court. They declared we had standing all along and the Superior Court had made a horrible error. The case went back down. He then passed it off to another judge who we believed was too impartial. We filed a motion to recuse. So after 3 years, we still have not gotten to see the ballots that there were six sworn affidavits for that were counterfeit. That is not the appropriate way to investigate. And the Secretary of State's office filed an amicus brief against us to prevent us from looking at the ballots. Now, why would a Secretary of State do that, especially after it's been found in a number of different jurisdictions that they actually did have standing and they had the rights as citizens to see these ballots and this evidence? So this is where the mic drop occurs. Remember, you never ask a question where you don't already know the answer. In a moment of bewilderment, perhaps, to this question, they ask, what kind of Secretary of State would have done that? And the ODC counsel responds, a corrupt one, I guess, specifically talking about Brad Raffensperger. The ODC counsel admitted in the midst of a court proceeding that in order for these conditions to have been met, the Secretary of State of the state of Georgia must be corrupt.
And I would argue that he was absolutely 100% correct in that estimation. Now, Favorito immediately fired back. That's your opinion, not mine. So the ODC Council is not arguing on behalf of anybody from the state of Georgia, not arguing about anybody from Fulton County or any election entity. He is arguing strictly for the Office of Disciplinary Counsel. However, that position of his argument to disbar Jeffrey Clark should at least have been somewhat congruent with the argument that there was no widespread fraud in the 2020 election. And regarding Georgia, he has been incorrectly proclaimed by Georgia officials since 2020 to state that a corrupt one, I guess, as a description for Brad Raffensperger in regards to that chief election officer of the state of Georgia, when presented not only with evidence of significant election issues that has gone publicly widely uninvestigated since 2020, but also with obfuscation in the judicial process to allow public transparency. I mean, that's a pretty detrimental blow, not only to the disbarment case as a whole, but also to the claims that have been made by Brad Raffensperger, the Georgia Secretary of State, regarding that 2020 election. Pretty much the most of these election claims that have been brought regarding the 2020 election have been dismissed, all on procedural grounds, prior to any sort of evidentiary hearing. And this is something that the mainstream media has often failed to acknowledge. Criminal cases that have been brought forth in places like Fulton County and in disbarment hearings like John Eastman's in California and now obviously Jeffrey Clark's in D.C. have actually allowed evidentiary claims to be heard on the record and under oath. So every time they tell you that no evidence has ever been presented, you can just tell them to look specifically at these cases or remind them that it was on procedural grounds that the evidence was never allowed to be entered into the record. And it was simply a matter of whimsy at that point. So Garland Favorito and Voter Georgia's 2020 ballot inspection case has been remanded back to the Superior Court. It's been 468 days, and it's still waiting to be heard. That original RICO case in Fulton County is now shaping up to be a blockbuster event. We're going to finally get some evidence of voter and election fraud in this RICO case in Fulton County, if it ever is allowed to go to court. I'm actually really looking forward to it. All right. Let me say thank you very much to Candylicious over on Pilled. Thank you to Slug Trail. Thank you again to Sean Joe. Sean Joe, thank you so much for your support, buddy. Thank you to Candylicious once more. And then Sherry M, who says, much love, Zach. Much love to you as well. All right, you guys, we are going to finally get to the penultimate story of today's episode. The very scary and dangerous subject of mass deaths that are likely to happen not only in America but around the world. So this news is something that has been speculated on for quite some time. A lot of people have been worried that at some point we're going to start seeing mass die-offs. We've already spoken of, you've probably in your personal life been affected by it, the somewhat of a cancer epidemic that seems to have swept across the world. A lot of young people being diagnosed with cancer. I can't tell you how many times videos have come across my feed and it's some like 25-year-old, 30-year-old, 35-year-old, I have cancer, giving their testimony about how they've suddenly, out of nowhere, developed cancer. Totally healthy. Nothing wrong with them. All of a sudden, they got cancer. But they're all pretty much jabbed up at this point. So this news, this warning, is coming from a world-leading virologist. And he's issuing this warning on this American public health threat, saying that a massive tsunami of death is soon going to destroy the global COVID-19 vaccinated population. His name is Dr. Geert van den Bosch. He's a respected Belgian virologist, and he recently occurred on a podcast, which is hosted by James Kunstler. Now, Dr. Bosch is certified in a couple of different areas, both virology and microbiology. He's also the inventor of a patent application for universal vaccines. He's also authored over 30 publications, and currently he's working as an independent research consultant. Now, Dr. Bosch is the most famous
for warning about the potential dangers of a mass vaccination program amid the COVID-19 pandemic. He warned that the programs could lead to monster COVID variants. We've talked about Dr. Bosch. It's been several years now. But he told Kunstler that shortly a massive tsunami of death among the vaccinated was likely to happen. He said this would start far more cases. They would start with far more cases of long COVID, or really just people constantly being sick. This is then going to replace the surge of cancers that I mentioned earlier, and it's going to end with a hyperacute wave. The doctor said, what I am predicting is a massive, massive tsunami of illness and death among highly vaccinated populations. Read that again. Highly vaccinated populations. Are you a person who's had four, five, six boosters? Then I believe you would be a part of this population. Now, you will see what will happen. For example, in the next coming week is more and more cases of more serious long COVID. This will start to replace the surge of cancers, and it will end with a hyperacute phase, a huge, huge wave. So Dr. Bosch goes on to cite his expertise. He says that he's been studying COVID for the last 4 years, and he next warned that all layers of society would fall apart during this hyperacute phase. It's going to cause complete chaos, per his estimation. The thing that I want your audience to understand, what we will be facing in the hyperacute COVID crisis that is imminent, is that we will have to build a completely new world. It is very, very clear that when this starts, our hospitals will collapse. And that means the chaos in all kinds of layers of society, financial, economic, social, you name it, it will be complete. Now, Dr. Bosch also told Kunstler that the best hope for vaccinated individuals, and these are the people in the audience that I really want to hear this. If you are a person who was vaccinated, if you took the jab because you were in the military, you took the jab because you were working at a hospital, you took the jab because they told you they were going to fire you in case you didn't, or maybe you were a person who just wanted to go to a concert, or you wanted to fly on planes, or you had to go out of the country. I don't care what reason it is. If you did take a jab, you may be fine. All right, I want to remind everybody of this. This is what I said at the very beginning of the show. We are not talking about a uniformity of ingredients that were in these vaccines, these clot shots. A friend of mine messaged me on Twitter and just reminded me when Carrie Madej was on the show. She said that 30% of these shots overall were causing 99% of the problems. We know about the website How Bad Is My Batch? We've talked about this before. You can go to How Bad Is My Batch? You can check the batch for your COVID-19 clot shot, and you can see if anybody else is getting sick or having problems or side effects as a result. If nobody's having side effects, then it's highly likely that maybe you are one of the people who got the placebo. Maybe you got saline. Maybe you got something that didn't have nanobots or micro machines in it. Maybe you got something that didn't have graphene oxide. Maybe you got something that didn't have lipid nanoparticles. But if you are a person who has been sick ever since this time, or if you ended up getting a second shot and then a booster and then you got sick, you're the people that I want to pay the closest attention to this. Because he says, even if you are a person who has gotten multiple vaccinations, it is possible to protect yourself. It is possible to find a way to remain living. You just need to wait till your immune system has had enough time to heal. So the most important thing is to avoid reinfection of COVID, or I would say pretty much anything else that's out there. And of course, in the meantime, there are supplements and there are medicines that you can take to ensure that your immune system does remain strong. I want to remind you about Dr. Z's Z-Stack. You can click this link right here to pick that up. And you can take Dr. Z's Z-Stack and you can keep your immune system healthy and strong exactly as it needs to be if you're going to be able to fight off the sicknesses that are inevitably going to come your way. The problem here is that the COVID-19 clot shots essentially take over your immune system and they shut down your natural immune response. And it makes it so that your body is producing only one single antibody for this very specific sickness. But even once your body is making that, you are still open and susceptible to a whole host of other sicknesses. So the best thing you can do is to keep yourself healthy
and to take things in a preventative manner. So I would also recommend that people get yourself some chlorine dioxide, whether it's through my supplier, the sponsors of the show, OnenessDrops.com, where you can use code RP78 to get 15% off your order, or it's another supplier of chlorine dioxide. I would say that this is an excellent thing to have on hand and to make sure that you're taking on a daily basis. Not medical advice. You can look this up for yourself and determine what's best for you. But at a bare minimum, because this product is bactericidal, germicidal, virucidal, and a whole host of other things, it is antimicrobial. It will make your dirty water clean to drink, and it will also take care of a whole host of other things. You might want to think about doing a parasite cleanse as well, which uses fenbendazole and ivermectin, because, you know, those little bugs that are living inside your body, you never know what they're going to be carrying, and you never know what they're going to be doing to your immune system as well. But head on over to OnenessDrops.com, use code RP78, support the show, support yourself. If you're a person who did take the jab, it's not a death sentence, and I want you to know that. I want you to know that you are likely, more than likely, you're going to be fine. But if you have been perpetually sick ever since then, there's a high likelihood that your immune system is compromised. And I want you to take care of yourself. I'm so sick of losing people. I can't tell you how many people have died since I started doing this. People that I never even had a chance to meet in person. But they're people who have died nonetheless. They've had an impact on my life. I've had an impact on their life. And I just am so sick of it. I don't want to see it anymore. So I want you to take care of yourself, and I want you, if you are a person with a family member who is in a position like this, please see what you can do to get them turned on to preventative measures. It would not hurt to take ivermectin, fenbendazole, hydroxychloroquine. There are so many different things, but please consult your medical professionals. Please also do me a favor. Head on over to MyPillow.com. Use code RP78 to save up to 80% off of all of Mike Lindell's amazing products. American made, American products from an American company. They've got everything for your bedroom and your bathroom. Mattresses, mattress toppers, sheets, pillows, you name it. Mike Lindell's got it. So support Mike Lindell in his effort to support the American election system, make it free and fair again, and also support me, Zach Payne, here on Red Pill 78. And then one more here before we close out the show. Prepare with redpill78.com. That's my friends at My Patriot Supply. If for some reason you're unable to go to the grocery store, if we do have a mass casualty event and things collapse, you need to be able to produce your own food, or you need to be able to get your own food from someplace where you know that it's going to be safe. This is 25-year shelf life with over 2,000 calories a day per person, 3 months emergency food supply. You're going to save $200 off when you head on over to prepare with redpill78.com. All right, so the doctor concludes here by saying it is the reinfection of vaccinated people that is responsible for this situation. The only difference is you will not be able to wait to take antivirals until you have symptoms. As soon as people see that in one or one of the other countries or one of the other states in the United States, when this starts with hospitalizations going up very rapidly, they need to take antivirals prophylactically, not wait until they have symptoms. Antiviral medications, we've already spoken about some antiparasitics, but there are other antivirals out there. I believe I'm going to have a new sponsor of the program that is a supplier for medications like this. And I don't have the information yet. They're in the process of getting signed up with my advertiser. My advertiser manager. So as soon as I have that, I will give you guys the information. And obviously, it will help you and it will help the program as well. So keep yourself safe. Keep yourself healthy. If you have the access to antivirals right now, like the doctor said, do not wait. If you're a person who's in this high risk group, do not wait. Make sure that you are taking care of yourself right now. Because if we can ride out the storm, we can make it through, and we'll be the ones rebuilding the world. Andre said, but then the Dems want to act like they have no idea why an attack on the country happened, or blame whites and anyone against their agenda or the increase in crime. It makes me sick. Thank you again, Andre. He says, thanks again for all you do. Have a great day and night. Take care, chat. Thank you so much, Andre. It's always good to see you out there, buddy. I'm glad to know that you're here. Thank you to everybody for supporting the show today. If you have not yet, please hit the like button. We've almost hit 1,000 likes, 4,800 people here and in on Rumble, and just under 1,000 likes, 908 likes. If we could hit 1,000 likes before I close out the show, that would be so awesome. Let me just make sure we have no more donations over on Pilled. So let me go ahead and pass out these gold pills. And then if you are free tonight, you can join me and Brad Goetz at 9 p.m. Eastern on Badlands Media. We're going to be going over another episode of Altered State. I hope that I can see you there. The gold pills have been passed out. Good luck. God bless. If I don't see you tonight, hopefully I'll see you tomorrow right here, 5 p.m. Bye-bye.